military attorney Todd Callender is an expert in international law and morbidity mortality law. He's been filing lawsuits and blowing the whistle on the enemy ever since they made the shots mandatory. These lawsuits have led to his research team amassing thousands of whistleblowers that point to a planned Marburg epidemic, already paid for by taxpayer dollars in the recent PREP Act. Todd Callender said that inside the lipid nanoparticles, there are sealed pathogens, including E. coli, Marburg, and Ebola, and that different pathogens can be released by different frequencies, pulsed through the 5G network.
Inside of these shots that people already received, inside the lipid nanoparticles, the hydrogel, there exists pathogens inside of the particles that have not yet opened. Those pathogens are chimeric. They include E. coli, Marburg, Ebola, Staphylococcus, and Brewer's yeast, amongst others. We know that upon the broadcast from the 5G system that is now employed across the United States and the world for that matter, when they broadcast an 18 gigahertz signal for 1 minute, three different times as a pulse, it will cause those lipid nanoparticles to swell and release these pathogenic contents, thereby causing a Marburg epidemic that they've already spent the money on. It's already done, right? The Marburg epidemic, for purposes of the law, has happened, and now we just need the actual disaster to happen. And there's actually worse parts to it than that, including the 1p36 gene deletion that effectively will turn those poor people into zombies. As odd as that sounds, our government's preparing for that.
He also points out that 1p36 gene deletion is the number one side effect of the Pfizer shots, a disease with zombie-like symptoms that make a person aggressive with a propensity to bite. The CDC published a public service announcement on the preparedness for a zombie apocalypse in 2011. That same year, Con Plan 8888-11, Counter Zombie Dominance, was published. The military's advanced ammunition, known as multi-purpose rounds, are single rounds comprised of multiple projectile options to be chosen via direct communication from the tank fire control to the cartridge chambered in the breech. So it would make sense to arm weaponized vaccines the same way. Popular online personality Jason Shurka has recently posted a warning that on October 4th, FEMA will be using 5G frequencies to activate nanopathogens in the blood of the vaccinated.
On October 4th at 2:22 p.m. Eastern Time, the emergency broadcast system will be activated across the entire United States under the leadership of FEMA, disguised as a test. However, this test will be used to send a specific high-frequency signal through devices like smartphones, radios, and TVs with the intention of activating graphene oxide and other nanoparticles that have been inserted into billions of human beings around the world through the obvious mediums. If the October 4th date does not occur for any reason, the backup plan will be to do it on October 11th at the same time. In the case that this is not able to be stopped, I ask you all to shut off your phones and all other relevant devices at 2 p.m. Eastern time for a period of 2 hours to be safe.
I don't know who this guy is, but I will add that we probably want to turn the 5G off for good. And we definitely need to take control of our government, because a plan as diabolical as this would be game over. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
All right, folks, that's the latest from Greg Reese, the latest Reese report to be found and shared at band.video and InfoWars.com. 5G activated zombie apocalypse, is it coming? And of course, you know, you might think that sounds kind of absurd, this idea of zombification. Zombies are sci-fi horror tropes, after all. That's fantasy. But of course, all of the most popular and, you know, long-lasting tropes, characters like this, actually resonate with humanity because there's something real about them, whether it's vampires or werewolves having to do with rabies and causing you to go wild. There's a reason that we are attracted to these. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I am your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be with you here on this Wednesday morning. We have a lot of news to cover. We have a lot of news to cover, okay? You can see if you're a TV viewer. You can see not only do I have this massive stack in front of me, I'm sorting it as we speak. And all of this is simply leftovers from stuff I didn't get to yesterday on the War Room. So that should give you an idea of how much we have to cover. So I haven't even gotten the vast majority of today's breaking news. But the empire is on the march. The globalists are doing their thing, as it were, which means that everything is collapsing. Just madness across the entire spectrum here. I got a stack on immigration. I got a stack on Ukraine war. I got a stack on AI and the growing threat of robotic tyrants. I got a stack on anti-Semitism and the ADL. I got a stack on Trump and the latest legal challenge for the former president. And, of course, a stack on China and a stack on crime and just race. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. So we'll get to as much of it as possible. Today we'll be joined by Matt Baker at the 10 o'clock in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm excited to talk to him because I think it's time for a transition. I think we should all be transitioning now as we enter a new phase of the information war. I think it may be past time that we simply try to explain to people what's going on. I think at this point you either get it or you don't. I mean, their plans are out in the open now, so it's not a question of whether you're aware of them or whether they're real or just speculation. I mean, they're real now. They're confirmed. It's in your face. Now the question is, how do we oppose it? How do we organize against it? How do we bring awareness not just to the fact that this is happening, but the fact that it's preventable, that we can actually stop this from happening and that we should stop it from happening? That's really the struggle that we have now. It's not explaining to people that there is a global government, that they're moving towards this technocratic, bio-financial control grid, but actually trying to speak to the humanity of the people that are now aware of this, trying to make the argument that it's actually worth it to uphold humanity and the immortal soul and all of the good, wonderful things that humanity is capable of. It's worth fighting for that against the inhuman, technocratic, transhuman agenda. Which you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. It's just obvious to us, just like instinct, when someone's like, yeah, we're transhumanists. We're going to live forever and upload our consciousness into a machine. And it's just like, oh my God, this is crazy. But then you go out on the street and you talk to people and they're like, that's so cool. I want to do that. I want to live forever. So we have to break them of that. We have to try to appeal to, you know, the good part of them that isn't willing to sacrifice its immortal soul for temporal pleasure. So we'll talk to Matt Baker about how we can possibly achieve that. We'll take your phone calls as well. Lots of videos to get to as well. Spent a long time yesterday on immigration, so we're going to sort of not dwell on that too much. As I think if you watched M4s yesterday, you probably got as much as you can handle of the immigration topic between the hour and a half I did on the War Room, preceded by Michael Yon on the Alex Jones Show. Should be readily apparent now. It's an invasion. We're under attack. It's genocide. Wake up. There's a lot of other genocidal aspects to this program that we'll have to discuss today. So let's just get right into it. Here it is, your Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 27th of September, 2023. Canadian Speaker of the House resigns following Nazi scandal. That's right. The Canadian Speaker of the House has resigned following the incident where a 98-year-old SS soldier was cheered and honored in Parliament, with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau refusing to take any responsibility despite meeting with the Ukrainian Nazi beforehand. As we noted earlier this week, Anthony Rota apologized for the scandal, but it wasn't enough. Trudeau threw Rhoda under the bus. Just EW there. Opposition leader Pierre Poilievre, I still don't know how to pronounce this guy's name, even though I like him a lot. He told Parliament that, quote, Canadians are sick and tired of a prime minister who never takes responsibility for things that happen under his watch, adding he always finds somebody else to throw under the bus, and asking the Speaker of the House, are you that person? And of course he is. He is resigned now. And it really is just strange the way these things go. I mean, did they not know the guy was a Nazi? If they didn't know that, then why'd they have him up? Like, obviously they knew that. They knew what he did. That's why they were honoring him. So, like, but we're still sponsoring the Ukrainian Nazis that are in operation now, still spending billions of dollars to support them. But if you honor them, then you have to resign. I mean, it's just it's a schizophrenic, it's a cognitive dissonance that is consuming our entire nation, because we have no principles. Everything's just sort of ad hoc, whatever's convenient, whatever's useful at the time to manipulate the masses, that's what they do. And then have to backtrack, pretend it didn't happen, or pretend like they're outraged at the thing that they did. It's all just nonsense, but very funny conclusion to that. And now they're actually trying to extradite the guy. Poland is like, oh, I see you've that guy you were honoring, he seems like a nice guy. I tell you what, we're going to try him on war crimes. So why don't you extradite him here to Poland and we'll execute him or something. Just crazy. Crazy week in that guy's life, huh? What a crazy week. Go from getting a standing ovation from the Canadian Parliament to possibly facing war crime tribunals in Poland. Woo, whiplash. Anyway, tens of thousands of Armenians flee their 2,000-year heartland in Karabakh, facing genocide. Shocking scenes have been emerging from the Armenian enclave of Nagorno-Karabakh this week after last week an Azerbaijani military offensive targeting the breakaway region killed at least 200 people and wounded many more. An exodus of tens of thousands of ethnic Armenians is underway from their 2,000-year ancient homeland of Artsakh, which in modern times has existed within the internationally recognized borders of Azerbaijan. They're calling it an ethnic cleansing campaign, as some observers have declared this marks the final end of the Republic of Artsakh, given the long line of cars been observed exiting towards Armenia's borders on fear that Azer troops are conducting an ethnic cleansing campaign. Again, not seeing a lot of news on this because, well, it's not convenient to the it's sort of gets in the way of the other geopolitical moves that are being made on the global chessboard. So, sure, it's ethnic cleansing. It's like a genocide going on, but they're not going to report on it because it's not actually about whether there's something horrific and of monumental importance going on. It's whether it benefits the deep state and their plans for endless war or not. In this case, it doesn't, so the media will ignore it. Meanwhile, the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic says that Dr. Fauci went to CIA headquarters to influence its investigation into the origins of COVID-19, which is interesting because other whistleblowers have revealed that the CIA, in fact, recruited Peter Daszak and the EcoHealth Alliance to actually create and release the virus. So how Dr. Fauci would be going to them to try to tell them how to organize things, that doesn't really make too much sense, but we'll get into that story a little bit later. Then we have this. After BLM, the S&P 100 added over 300,000 jobs. 23% were black workers. Don't you hate when they change the headlines on you? This is what it originally said. Corporate America promised to hire a lot more people of color. It actually did. 94% of the new jobs in the S&P 100, largest businesses in America, went to people of color. Only 6% went to the majority white population. I mean, this was a campaign alongside the other campaigns for, white genocide. Final story of the Daily Dispatch is this. Hunter Biden received $250,000 wire transfers originating in Beijing with the beneficiary address of Joe Biden's home. That's right. Hunter Biden received wires that originated in Beijing for more than $250,000 from Chinese business partners during the summer of 2019, wires that listed the Delaware home of Joe Biden as the beneficiary address for the funds. Fox News Digital has learned from a congressional committee, House Oversight Committee James Comer, of Kentucky has been investigating the Biden family business dealings and President Biden's alleged involvement in those ventures. As part of the investigation, Comer subpoenaed financial records related to specific bank accounts and received records of two wires originating from Beijing and linked to BHR Partners. BHR Partners is a joint venture between Hunter Biden's Rosemont Seneca and Chinese investment firm Bohai Capital. BHR Partners is a Beijing-backed private equity firm controlled by the Bank of China Limited. Hunter Biden reportedly sat on the board of directors for BHR Partners. The first wire transfer was sent to Hunter Biden dated July 26, 2019 for $10,000 from an individual named Mish Wang Jin, XIN. The second transfer was dated August 2nd, 2019 and was for $250,000 from Li Jiang Shen, known also as Jonathan Li, the CEO of BHR Partners, and Ms. Tan Ling. The committee is trying to identify Ling's role at this moment. So the corruption, the Biden corruption, Biden family crime syndicate still being investigated by the House committee there, and the impeachment rolls on. But no evidence. But there's no evidence. I mean, aside from the wire transfers and the phone calls and the statements from whistleblowers and Biden himself admitting it on camera and the Hunter Biden laptop chock full of information, as well as the just massive amount of emails that have been released. But, you know, other than that stuff, no evidence. No evidence of the Biden corruption. Except for the text messages and the other Biden family members discussing exactly how much money would go to, quote, the big guy, a.k.a. Pedo Pete, a.k.a. Joe Biden, vice president of the United States. But like, other than that, no evidence at all. Not even a speck of evidence other than the piles of evidence that I just laid out there. But other than that, nothing. No, nothing at all. That's what they keep saying. Keep saying no evidence, no evidence, no evidence. Okay, just want you to open your eyes and you'll see all of the evidence. We have a lot of COVID news today as well. I guess we'll just get through some of that here real quick. Although some of it we will need to spend at least a little bit of time on. Risks of long COVID have been greatly exaggerated. Major global study finds when the 200 symptoms are listed to the condition, experts have said, a lack of definition could lead to more anxiety among the public, they added. Harvard Yale scientists investigate this new condition called long vax. Long vax. Interesting. This is the convenience of having a plan like this, where you have a disease that you created in a lab and released on purpose that's basically the flu and kind of impossible to determine whether it's a cold or the flu or COVID. And so you're able to pump the numbers that way. Then you can fabricate or, you know, artificially inflate the numbers of COVID deaths by calling everybody that goes into a hospital a COVID case if they test positive for COVID, which, again, as we just discussed, can't really be determined whether it's COVID or something else. And then you provide the vax, and the vax has horrible side effects, but then you can call those side effects long COVID. You can say, actually, that's just part of COVID. Very convenient sort of system they've worked up here when you have a population that is utterly mindless and just goes along with whatever you say, no matter how nonsensical it is on the face of it. So very convenient. Convenient they have all these things in place. They say long COVID risks are, quote, distorted by flawed research. Researchers want to see internationally established diagnostic criteria when it comes to long COVID, as well as narrowly defined symptoms and the avoidance of the, quote, umbrella term. The risk of contracting long COVID may have been exaggerated due to flawed research, leading to unnecessarily high levels of anxiety about suffering from it. A new study suggests major flaws in the literature on the condition likely exaggerated the true threat of contracting it, new research argues. I guess why not? We'll take credit for that too. Hey, we'll take credit. I feel comfortable saying we told you so, just because everything's fake. Everything about COVID is fake. You can just add this to the list, right? Just off top of my head, you've got the lie about it being dangerous and then not dangerous, right? Just the lies about whether we should be doing anything about this or whether it's racist to say that it came from China. Oh, the fact that it came from China, the fact that it came from China, and the fact that it came from a lab in China, the fact that it was a consequence of gain-of-function research being carried out by Peter Daszak, the NIH, the EcoHealth Alliance, and Anthony Fauci, whether it was as deadly as they said it was, whether, social distancing, lockdowns, masks, school closures. I mean, there's literally no part of the COVID story that the experts have been correct on. Literally none of it. I mean, not even one part of it. They got absolutely nothing right. So it's like, I guess we're in the situation where either our medical establishment, the global World Health Organization or the CDC, these venerable organizations, either they are just horribly inefficient and just bad at what they're supposed to be doing, or they know what they're doing and this is all part of a plan, which seems to be the case as we have this latest story. ALX posted the statement from the Congress. The House Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic says that Dr. Fauci went to CIA headquarters to influence its investigation of the origins of COVID-19. Yeah, influence the investigation. In other words, distract from the reality, to coordinate with the spy agencies, to use their influence on the media to disguise the fact that this was all man-made, that this was a mass murder campaign for which tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people have died. That's interesting. The statement here from the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic says this: Dear Inspector General Grimm, the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic Select Subcommittee has received concerning information regarding CIA's investigation into the origin of COVID-19. According to information gathered by the Select Subcommittee, Dr. Anthony Fauci, then director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, played a role in the CIA's review of the origin of COVID-19. The information provided suggests that Dr. Fauci was escorted into the Central Intelligence Agency's headquarters without a record of entry, by the way, and participated in the analysis to influence the agency's review. Our goal is to ensure the scientific investigative process regarding the origins of COVID-19 was fair, impartial, and free of alternative influence. Laughable, right? It's not a question of whether it was influenced. It's not a question of whether or not the investigation was held strictly to the standards of scientific investigative process. It's not a question of whether or not, it's a question of how much it was influenced. And the question is, and the answer to that question is completely. It was completely influenced. It was totally manufactured from the beginning. There was never an investigation into the origin of COVID because they knew that if there was an honest investigation, they would have blood on their hands. This is like the murderer going in and helping the investigation from the police department. Ted Bundy volunteers to go into the police station and help them guide the investigation into the disappearing women. Man, mass murderers. We're learning more and more about how much the intelligence agencies had their hands in the creation, distribution, and then following cover-up of coronavirus from its origins. We, of course, have had on the whistleblower talking about how he personally spoke to Peter Daszak, the EcoHealth Alliance, and heard Peter Daszak claim that he was being recruited by the CIA for some sort of special project. Now we've got this latest new allegations that Dr. Fauci potentially influenced CIA COVID-19 origins investigations. Again, I think they have this backwards, or at least I don't think that it was Fauci going in and influencing the CIA. I think you have either the CIA cooperating with and influencing Fauci, or you have just both of them, basically, on this, like, Fauci is in the CIA, and it's just the CIA doing this. Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic Chairman Brad Winstrup revealed new allegations that Dr. Fauci went to the CIA headquarters to influence COVID-19 origins investigation. This revelation comes on the heels of recently acquired whistleblower testimony alleging that the CIA potentially skewed its COVID-19 origins by offering six analysts significant financial incentives to conclude that the result of the investigation was inconclusive. Dr. Fauci's questionable presence at the CIA, coupled with the recently uncovered evidence that Dr. Fauci, prompted the drafting of the Proximal Origin, the infamous paper that was used to attempt to disprove the lab leak theory. And it lends credence to the heightened concerns about the promotion of false COVID-19 origins narrative by multiple federal government agencies. So translation, they were all in on it. They were all in on the cover-up of this crime that they committed, this massive crime against humanity that they planned even before the crime was perpetrated to take advantage of in order to move us significantly towards their designed global government control grid future. After all, that's what Event 201 was. I mean, you have all of the aspects of a massive, concerted criminal enterprise at work here. You've got the pre-planning. You've got them on tape talking about how they would respond to this. You've got them emailing each other, talking about how to cover up the reality that it was a lab leak origin. And it's like the cover-up is because it was a crime. You don't cover something up if you are just genuinely trying to figure out where this came from. Now, they might be able to couch this in some sort of psychological paradigm where they're like, well, if people thought it came from a lab, then they wouldn't trust us. And if they don't trust us, then they won't listen to our solutions. And if they don't listen to our solutions, the problem will be a lot worse. So in order to defeat the virus, we have to take on this burden of the virtuous lie. We have to lie about where it came from, because we need the people's trust to be able to solve this problem. And if we have to lie to do that, then that. But that's a lie in and of itself, right? That's their own ham-fisted, retroactive justification for what they were actually doing, which was extremely dangerous gain-of-function research that they knew from the beginning was the source of the coronavirus pandemic. Yet they covered that up on purpose in cooperation with the CIA and the medical establishment. Hope I cleared that up for you. I mean, it is outrageously obvious, but there it is. And then we had this last week. We covered this at the time, but it relates to what we were just discussing. It's the testimony from the CIA whistleblower alleging new information on COVID-19 origins. In this case, the staff of the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic and Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence heard testimony from a whistleblower alleging that the CIA offered six analysts significant monetary incentives to change their position on COVID-19's origins. The whistleblower, who presents as a highly credible senior-level CIA officer, alleges that of the seven members assigned to the CIA team tasked with analyzing COVID-19 origins, six officers concluded that the virus likely originated from a lab in Wuhan, China. The CIA then, however, allegedly offered financial incentives to the six of the experts involved in the investigation to change their conclusion in favor of a zoonotic origin, of an unexpected natural spillover event, which they knew to be false. So where are the criminal charges, and what should they be exactly? I mean, what is the Nuremberg 2.0 tribunal going to be charging these people with? Right? I mean, this is a crime against humanity. Everything that has come from coronavirus can be laid at their feet. So after all, whether or not you even believe that coronavirus is real or, you know, any more dangerous than the flu, if you believe that just a few thousand people died of this virus or millions, I mean, you know, it depends on where you land. But regardless of all of that, all of the spikes in mental illness that we've seen as a consequence of shutting down the schools, all of the lost learning, all of the deaths from cancer screenings that were missed because hospitals refused to perform those preventative measures as they were focusing entirely on COVID. All of the money that's been stolen by the hundreds of billions of dollars, all of the jobs lost, all of the small businesses that were forced to close as the big corporate powers consolidated their control of the American economy throughout COVID. All of the outrage, all of the broken families, all of the grandmothers forced to die alone in a room while their family stood on the other side of plastic divides, unable to give their loved ones a final hug. All of that is a consequence of this virus being released, of exactly what they covered up, what they perpetrated, what these people carried out as a massive, coordinated, orchestrated, planned campaign of genocide against the world population. How much more evidence do we need for this? How much longer are we going to be on the fact-finding side of this criminal enterprise? Where are the RICO charges? Where are the crimes against humanity tribunals to be held by the UN? Of course, it's not going to be held because the organizations that would carry out such a court case are the ones that were involved in it. So you're not going to see the UN call for a tribunal of this. It was the UN that helped orchestrate this. There was a undersecretary of the UN, the top actual coordinator of the UN's, as they, you know, they facilitate the communications between the UN and the world leaders, was actually at Event 201 as a primary player. So they're guilty in this as well. So how do we get justice for this? And is justice even possible? It's a start. It's a start, actually, uncovering this stuff and having the select subcommittee actually drill down and ask these questions. They're now demanding all communications between the CIA and Fauci. But again, this is the beauty, this is the convenience of having, you know, national security measures as an excuse to cover up anything. Because they can literally say, I mean, this is where like disinformation or misinformation comes in, where they can say, yeah, look, the CIA helped cover up the origins of the coronavirus, but if people knew that, it'd be very dangerous. People then wouldn't trust us. So in terms of national security, it's incumbent on us to hide this and disguise this and lie about this because we're saving lives here. That's the excuse they'll make. So also this headline that's – this whole story is kind of hilarious. It's from Harvard and says, how federal missteps open door to COVID misinformation. And the long story short on this, the too long didn't read on this, was basically like the government kept lying, kept concealing information, kept saying things that weren't true. And that opened the door for conspiracy theorists who were right about everything. And that's apparently a bad thing, not because the government got stuff wrong, but because the conspiracy theorists were able to take advantage of the government being wrong. In other words, you tell the truth and you're the bad guy. They should just listen and believe the liars. We've got some interesting multiculturalism news that we'll get to in the next hour. We'll open up for your phone calls as well. We'll be joined by Matt Baker in the 10 o'clock time period. We've got some political news that we want to get to first. And some very concerning statements from both the media and powerful people in the deep state. But first, just some of the pure absurdity that we're dealing with. Joe Biden's dog bites another Secret Service agent. 11th known incident. 11th known incident. The latest biting incident involved a 2-year-old German Shepherd was confirmed on Tuesday when the United States Secret Service Chief of Communications, Anthony Guglielmi, told CNN that it occurred. Yesterday around 8 p.m., a Secret Service Uniform Division police officer came in contact with a First Family pet and was bitten. The officer was treated by medical personnel on the complex. Guglielmi said the agent had been doing well after he spoke with Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle. The Secret Service agents do not handle the family's first pets, but they do often come in contact with the animals. Former USSS agent Jonathan Wackrow told CNN the president has essentially created a workplace hazard. Which again, it's not really reflective on the dog. It's reflective on the person, the owner of the dog, that is Joe Biden. After all, this is like the third dog they've had because the other ones kept biting people. And this one just keeps biting people as well. You know, it's like we got a president whose son is an embarrassing, crack-addicted, whoremonger, corrupt psychopath, whose daughters have written the most disgusting things about how they were abused as children, whose dogs won't stop biting people constantly. It's just everything about this guy is just like he just resonates evil. He just reverberates with this evil vibration that infects everybody around him. It's really something else. Of course, Biden almost falls down the steps on the same day as report about Handler's mission to prevent him falling. It's a headline from InfoWars. Joe Biden almost fell down the small set of Air Force One steps that are specifically used to prevent him falling on Tuesday. The incident occurred on the same day that a report emerged detailing the lengths that his handlers are going to prevent Biden from constantly falling over. This is that story from Axios. Biden's campaign secret mission for reelection: don't let him trip. Yeah, good luck with that. As I said yesterday, maybe don't let him trip every time he goes outside. That would be a good start. They need to hang 12 hours since Joe Biden has embarrassed us on the world stage. The good news is they never have to go much higher than 12. It's about every 12 hours. It's about on average every 12 hours that Joe Biden either physically or mentally collapses in front of the entire world. And we all have to hang our head in shame that this bumbling moron is the leader of the free world. Voters expressing deep concern about the 80-year-old president's age and fitness for office. But we're also concerned about his open corruption, his devious machinations, his seemingly completely incoherent anger at unexpected times, his tendency to be a tyrannical, despotic jackass 90% of the time. But I don't expand out from Joe Biden because he's just a symptom of the overall issue that we're dealing with. And it's becoming more and more obvious. And the latest thing that Trump's having to deal with is this lawsuit about his undervaluing his properties. And we can get into this in just a second. But just know it has literally nothing to do with just good, honest people just trying to enforce the law, just trying to keep people honest. It's like, no, this is an entire national system has been weaponized. Not just one branch of the government, not just the DOJ, not just the secretary, the whatever treasury, everything has been weaponized to stop not Donald Trump in particular, but Donald Trump as a symbol of populist support, as a symbol of an outsider from beyond the bounds of the system coming into the system without going through their vetting process first. That's what they're trying to destroy. That's what they are destroying as we speak. That's what all of this has to do with. And it is obvious from their own statements. So let's go now to clip number 14. This is James Clapper, former CIA director, right? Says he's worried FBI or he's worried Trump will be reelected and throw his political opponents in jail. What? He'll send his political opponents to jail? Well, we should send him to jail then. Let's watch.
In a recent profile, General Milley raised the possibility that he thought if Trump was reelected, he would throw his opponents in jail. He said that he would be at the top of the list. Do you think that that's a real concern? And are you concerned that you could be on Trump's enemies list?
Well, sure. I think there are probably a lot of people that are potentially on such a list. And again, that's reprehensible. I think General Milley's comment was he didn't think President Trump would be reelected. Well, I'm not so sure about that. So, yeah, that's a real concern for many of us.
It's a real concern for the lifelong criminals that have run our deep state. It's a real concern for the warmongering psychopaths that manipulate our government from the shadows that Donald Trump might get into office and might actually want to bring them to heel. A very deeply concerning thing for these criminals that somebody might want to actually enforce the law. I don't have to highlight to you the hypocrisy, the double standard, the idea that they are actively trying to send Donald Trump to prison as we speak on any number of absurd claims, whether it's January 6th or the 2020 election. They don't care. Whatever they can get him on, they're going to try to get him on. And then they go on TV and talk about how concerning it would be that Donald Trump has signaled that he would want to actually punish the people that are actively destroying our government. And again, we'll expand on this in a second, because I have another video from Steve Schmidt, the founder of the Lincoln Project, taking it to even a greater level of absurdity. But understand that this isn't hypocrisy as much. As such, like, it's not, we've talked about this before, like, if I smoke but tell you you shouldn't smoke, I'm a hypocrite because I'm doing the thing I say you shouldn't do, but I still want what's best for you. It's like a positive hypocrisy almost. And it's like, look, I fall short of this, but this is the right thing to do at the end of the day, even though I don't live up to it. And that's still hypocrisy. That is hypocrisy. That's like the definition of hypocrisy. This is not hypocrisy. This is deception. Pure and simple. This is lies. This is projection. This is manipulation. This is psychological operations, in effect, being played out on our TV screens in America in the year 2023. This is not hypocrisy. This is a plan. This is a style of governance that they're operating with. Because they don't want what's best for us. Because it has nothing to do with practice what you preach. This has everything to do with they are on a mission to crush Donald Trump as a symbol of the populist uprising, as a symbol of an outsider actually taking advantage of the form and function of our government in order to circumvent the deep state controlled path to power that they've wielded and used to control the United States government for the last several decades. They are trying to protect that because it allows them to jail their political opponents. I mean, they're sending Owen Schroyer to jail. They're targeting InfoWars with destruction. They're targeting anybody who stands up against them with decades in prison or total financial ruin. And then they're claiming that they're scared because if Donald Trump gets into office, he might actually do something about this. So it's not hypocrisy. It's not even really cognitive dissonance. It's an active campaign of purposeful deception, coercion, lies, manipulation, and tyrannical. This is how tyranny manifests in the modern world. Since we actually still do have a First Amendment, we still do have free speech, they can't just come out and stomp on our necks like they want to, so they have to do it in a deceitful and underhanded way. We've been laying this out for decades now, and I hope you can support us in this mission by going to InfoWarsStore.com. InfoWarsStore.com is what keeps us free and capable of opposing this unified, monolithic conspiracy that is actively taking down the United States by eliminating our freedoms. Help us to ensure the continuation of this nation at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So the latest legal attack on Trump is detailed in this NBC News report. New York judge rules Trump committed fraud and lied about his net worth for years. Oh, focusing on the important things, I see. New York judge ruling in the state attorney general's $250 million lawsuit against Donald Trump and his company ruled Tuesday that the former president committed repeated acts of fraud for years. According to the ruling, which allows the civil trial to begin next week, Trump lied to banks and insurers by both overvaluing and undervaluing his assets when it was to his benefit, while at the same time exaggerating his net worth to the tunes of billions of dollars. In his 35-page ruling, Judge Arthur Engoron said Trump continually lied on his financial statements and was able to get favorable loan terms and lower insurance premiums as a result. Trump's legal argument defending the statements were based on, quote, a fantasy world, not the real world, Engoron wrote. At one point, the judge also pointed to Trump having exaggerated the size of his New York apartment to pump its value. Well, throw him in prison then. It's just like, what? He said his apartment was bigger than it actually was. So, okay. What is the crime here? The loans that he took out by supposedly overvaluing or undervaluing his properties. Did he pay them off? Oh, he did? Oh, he paid off all the loans, did he? Okay, so where's the fraud? Where is the benefit of the fraud? I genuinely don't understand this. Also, is that a practice of banks that they're going to give out loans based on collateral that you just tell them how much it's worth? I don't think that's how it works, really. I think they do a bit more due diligence than that. But Simon Ateba on Twitter says this: outraged Eric Trump condemns New York ruling, writes, in an attempt to destroy my father and kick him out of New York, a judge just ruled that Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida is worth only approximately $18 million. Mar-a-Lago is speculated to be worth well over $1 billion, making arguably the most valuable residential property in the country. It's also corrupt and coordinated. So this is the thing. This judge decides that actually Mar-a-Lago is only worth $18 million. So when you valued it higher than that, you're committing fraud. But what is he basing this on? His own subjective interpretation? Also a wildly dishonest one? I'll show you that in just a second. But Eric Trump added, today I lost all faith in New York legal system. Never before have I seen such hatred towards one person by a judge. A coordinated effort with the attorney general to destroy a man's life, company, and accomplishments. We have run an exceptional company, never missing a loan payment, making banks hundreds of millions of dollars, developing some of our most iconic assets in the world. Yet today, the persecution of our family continues. While the president currently sitting is has just run a criminal enterprise for the last several decades, building nothing, creating nothing, providing no jobs for anybody, but somehow raking in millions upon millions of dollars from Chinese oil companies and Ukrainian groups. So Kanoka the Great lays this out on Twitter. He says, New York judge ruled that Trump inflated his property value, including Mar-a-Lago, which the judge determined was worth between $18 and $26 million from 2011 to 2021. To put this in perspective, the neighboring homes on just a quarter to little less than 1 acre are listed for $18 to $40 million. Mar-a-Lago, the 20-acre property in the middle, is worth somehow less despite being 20 to 70 times larger. Eric Trump says the real estate circles are laughing in Florida, are laughing at this foolishness. Donald Trump Jr. says if Mar-a-Lago is worth $18 million, I'll take 10, please. And he actually lays out, I'm not sure if we can get, if y'all bring up the tweet, we can actually see the image of this. Because they show that there's these little tiny houses on a quarter acre that are worth like $22 million. And somehow Mar-a-Lago, this massive sprawling estate of 20 acres, is only worth $18 million. They make that claim and then say that it's fraud because he valued it higher. Okay. Okay, sure. We'll go back to that image on the other side because you need to study. You need to understand exactly how fraudulent this fraud ruling is. Again, this is just the latest attack on Donald Trump. New York judge rules Trump committed fraud and lied about his net worth for years based on the judge's own fantasy world. This is the pure, unfiltered projection of the leftist activist judge. In his 35-page ruling, Judge Arthur Engoron said Trump continually lied on his financial statements and was able to get favorable loan terms. They're like, he said his apartment was bigger than it actually was. Yeah, red headline at Drudge. Fraud! Well, we're dealing with like a, like some sort of, I don't know, what's the term where it's like you're both inside and outside at the same time, like interdimensional, some sort of like inside out fraud where like the fraud case is predicated on fraud itself. And the ruling is fraudulent when they're accusing you of fraud. It's confusing, actually. But not really. Essentially, they're just taking completely absurdly low valuations for some of Trump's properties, saying they believe that's the correct valuation. So therefore, the higher valuation must be fraud, even though the higher valuation is the actual legitimate valuation. Mar-a-Lago is the perfect example. Right. This guy in this fraud ruling, like part of this fraud ruling is based on the valuation of Mar-a-Lago, which he claims is worth $18 million. $18 million. There's like bungalows in Los Angeles worth more than that. Right. And so if you look at this map from Kanoka the Great, and the crew can bring it up on screen so we can actually read the numbers. But you can see the properties around Mar-a-Lago outlined in red. And you've got these little tiny little quarter-acre properties worth $22 million, $17 million, $25 million on, again, like less than an acre. And then you scroll down a little, and you can see the Mar-a-Lago property outlined in red, just dwarfing all of the others. I mean, it's like several blocks worth of these small houses. So you've got several blocks worth of houses, each one worth $18 million. And apparently Mar-a-Lago is worth $18 million. Apparently Mar-a-Lago, the 20-acre estate with the tennis courts and the hotel and the just massive, like, just everything's huge. And you've got these little tiny ones worth more somehow. 0.39 acres is $25 million, but the 20-acre estate with the massive, important national history called the Southern White House, like owned by all these famous people, a massive destination, that's only worth $18 million. They make that ridiculous claim and then say it's fraudulent that Trump said it was worth more, which again is hilarious. Forbes even talked about this a while ago, and they say, talking about the valuation of Mar-a-Lago, they say that $500 million figure, absurd at the time the Trump organization proposed it, suddenly became somewhat feasible, somewhat reasonable. Real estate experts outside of Palm Beach guessed the place was worth more than $200 million. Brokers on the island thought it could be worth more, with an aggressive estimate coming in at $725 million. When Forbes last valued the property in March, we went with a conservative $350 million. If Trump sold Mar-a-Lago for that amount, he'd reap 35 times return on his original $10 million investment, making one of the best deals of his career. And then the activist judge comes along and says it's worth only $18 million and charges him for fraud for saying otherwise. Okay, just a little illustration of how utterly and completely ridiculous these legal charges. I mean, every one of the legal charges against Trump are just about that ridiculous. This isn't a particular outlier in this. And you understand that even without a secretive, covert conspiracy going on, this is an open conspiracy at this point. This is the new form of conspiracy that we're seeing in the world. Used to be that you'd have to cover things up, you'd have to do it in secret, you'd have to do it behind. Now everybody just knows to play their part. The judges, the activists, the media knows how to report it. They all just know what to do. They know that the goal is destroying Trump. And they've been fed whatever lie they need to be fed in order to get them behind this. If you're an anti-racist, then you're told that Trump is racist. So you have to destroy him for that. If you're a women's rights activist, you have to be told that he's a misogynist. So you'll – it doesn't matter. The point is they want to destroy Trump, destroy Trump, destroy Trump. That's all they care about. Why? Because he represents a revolutionary change in American politics that threatens their entire corrupt system from operating in the way that it does, specifically for the exploitation and destruction of the American system as a whole in a slow, managed, purposeful fashion. He halted and in some cases reversed that for the 4 years he was in office, and that's undesirable to the international financial cadres that actually run our country. Clip 18 is Steve Schmidt. I believe he's the founder of the Lincoln Project, talking about Trump, saying similar things to what we just heard James Clapper saying, where you've got this current political, you've got the current regime in America under Joe Biden actively persecuting its political opponents, targeting the biggest right-wing activists specifically on purpose, as they say, in a shock and awe campaign to destroy the organized resistance to their program, while simultaneously attempting in a myriad of ways, like 10 different ways, to imprison their primary political rival in Donald Trump. Here's how Steve Schmidt puts it, and let's just watch and we'll comment on the other side. Clip by 18.
What do you make of the fact that it does seem to me that the country, and in many cases the media, seems numb to it?
I think there's no question that the country and the media is numb to it. The threshold in this moment is very simple. Everything that Donald Trump says should be taken literally and seriously. What he did today was threaten the employees, the journalists at NBC News. What he said more broadly is he's going to shut down the free media in the United States. What he announced today as a candidate for president in 2023 is he's coming after the American media. He's coming after his political opponents. Why is he running for president? He's running for retribution. Retribution, according to Donald Trump, is a philosophy of avenging anybody who was against him. So we are on the edge of an abyss in this country. And it seems that there is a paralysis, a numbness, a total disregard for the clear and present threat. There is something extraordinary happening. The people who are trying to tear down democracy in the country keep telling the rest of the country what it is they plan to do, to such a degree that they have announced their plans 6 months into 2025 to have taken apart the whole of the federal government. Now, since FDR's time in office, the legislative metric in the United States has been 100 days, not 6 months. This is a racist code whistle to every white supremacist in the country, because it's how long it took Adolf Hitler to take Weimar Germany to a complete and total dictatorship. That included, by the way, the military swearing an oath of allegiance, not to the nation, but to the Führer. And the military was the institution amongst many in Germany that were the last holdouts to this. But once he was in power, they were the first to submit. And what Donald
Trump.
That's
right, folks. They're calling Donald Trump Hitler, and they're mad that nobody's taking them seriously anymore. They're very angry that their hysterical, paranoid screeching is less effective than it used to be. I mean, think about how far gone these people are. You want to talk about conspiracy theories. He thinks that because Donald Trump says it'll take him 6 months to get the government back on track, that's a racist dog whistle referring to the amount of time it took Hitler to become dictator in Germany. These people are insane. No, who knows how long it took Hitler? Like 6 months? What? What? So now the time period of 6 months is a Nazi dog whistle? I mean, you'll want to talk about paranoid, schizophrenic, tinfoil hat-wearing freaks, man. These people, they see Nazis under their bed. They see Nazis behind every curtain. 6 months? Well, if you reference half a year, it must be an oblique reference to the Fourth Reich. What? So much more to discuss still. I'm trying to think of how we make our way through all of this news. There's something that sort of ties it all in together, and it is the... Well, it can really just be summed up with the idea of the World Economic Forum, stakeholder capitalism, the fact that they are forcibly re-engineering, reinventing, reconfiguring open market capitalism to be in service of their globalist designs by hijacking entire corporate structures, by first consolidating into those corporate structures all of the previously disparate and non-centralized small businesses, get them all in one corporate structure, then take over that corporate structure and use its corporate financial power to impose your will on an unwilling populace. That is the purpose behind woke capitalism, which is really just stakeholder capitalism, which is the World Economic Forum's new design for the economy of the world. And they're finding some pushback on this, and we'll get to that in just a second. Before we do, let's take a look at the consequences of just some of this program. Steve Saylor on Twitter says this: a general finding is that feminist culture correlates with unhappiness amongst teen girls. E.g., adolescent girls suffer the most psychological distress relative to adolescent boys in gender-equal Sweden and the least in Muslim Indonesia. This is very, very interesting chart they have. The article at UNZReview, UNZ.com, says this: the gender gap in adolescent mental health, a cross national investigation of 566,829 adolescents across 73 countries, girls have worse average mental health than boys across four measures of mental health. There's a large heterogeneity in the size of the mental health gender gap across countries. The gap is most pronounced for psychological distress and life satisfaction. More gender equal countries have larger gender gaps in mental health. Four main results. One, the gender gap in mental health in adolescents is largely ubiquitous cross-culturally, with girls having worse average mental health. Two, there is considerable cross-national heterogeneity, in other words, the same across all these groups, in the size of the gender gap, with the direction reversed in a minority of countries. Three, higher GDP per capita is associated with worse average mental health and a larger gender gap across all mental health outcomes. And four, more gender equal countries have larger gender gaps across all mental health outcomes. Taken together, our findings suggest that while the gender gap appears largely ubiquitous, its size differs considerably by region, country, and dimensions of mental health. Findings point to the hitherto unrealized complex nature of gender disparities in mental health and possible incongruence between expectations and reality in high gender equal countries. Translation: the more equal genders are within a country, the more unequal the gender gap in mental health. In other words, if your country is ultra feminist, it turns out you have the widest disparity between girls and boys in their mental health outcomes. So you've got more girls compared to boys being mentally unwell, being reliant on antipsychotics or antidepressants in places where supposedly feminist ideology has been manifest. And so they've got all of these countries laid out, and you've got the psychological distress measurement. And way over here on the right, you can see that it's all teal, because teal is the number four, is the color denoting Europe region A. So that would be places like Denmark and Finland and the Netherlands and Sweden. They have the highest level of psychological distress, especially amongst women, compared to things like Indonesia, Lebanon, Philippines, Vietnam, Japan, Azerbaijan, Turkey, and all of these very not feminist countries. And you can actually see by the distribution of the colors that there's no teal here. There's no European countries in the low psychological distress, increasing in amounts as you move farther to the right, and then dominating the far end of this spectrum that is the most psychologically distressed. And I think it's pretty simple. I think it's because this entire ideology thrives on misery. I don't actually think it's that complicated. I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's a feedback loop of misery. You've got people telling girls, you should be miserable. You are miserable. Your life is miserable. You're oppressed. You're being controlled. It's not true, but they're able to indoctrinate girls into this idea. And then they make political decisions based on this fraudulent idea that makes everything worse for everybody, which only makes everybody more unhappy, because these people thrive on misery. And you have to understand, what power do these people have if everyone is happy, if everyone is healthy, if everyone is in good relationships and has lots of friends, has a nice job that they enjoy, and they don't work too hard, they make a good living? Where is their in? Where is their vulnerability to be exploited? Where do they have a chance to get their hooks in and start to control you? It doesn't exist. So either they have to take advantage of existing misery, or they have to fabricate the misery where it doesn't exist. These people thrive on misery, and they're utterly and completely divorced from the natural order, from the way things just are. They despise nature. They despise God. They despise creation. They want to hijack, destroy, and reformulate this in a fantasy world that doesn't actually comport with reality in any fashion, right? So it's inevitable that people are going to be unhappy. It's inevitable that people are going to be miserable when they're placed in a world that is completely out of sorts with the natural inclination of the people that live there. I mean, it kind of makes perfect sense, actually. Like, it's kind of a brilliantly evil plan that they have going on here, where you make people miserable, you offer the solution to that misery, the solution itself increases the misery, and you're there to take advantage of the increase in misery with your continuing misery. Like, it's just, it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. And this is, you know, trust the science. This is science. And it's affecting, you know, women more than men, because they're the targets at this point. And it's just like any government program where you just go, you go, okay, you implemented this program to help these specific people. After the implementation of the program, and as a consequence of that program, these people are more miserable, less successful, less capable, less happy overall. Any idea, any impetus, any inclination to reverse that policy, to stop that policy? No, because they're ideologically driven. They are driven by a perverted, distorted, unnatural, satanic ideology that feeds on misery like a vampire feeds on blood. And they only ever double down. We'll take a look at Black Lives Matter, where this is manifest really more apparently than anywhere else, where they implement all these things to help the black community, and the black community has been utterly destroyed as a consequence. They're not stopping. They're only increasing. This is the American Journal, InfoWars.com, band.video. I'll try to open up phone lines for much of the show. I just don't know if I'm going to have time to do it today. I got all these stories. I can vaguely see a path before me how to get through all of them, but I want to get to all of them, help to illustrate them as clearly as possible. And we're sort of just jumping from one to the next story, but there's a through line that I think comes out. You know, maybe the best thing to do is just be like, read all of these headlines right at once, and then just like, unless you get the full picture, you got to see the forest for the trees. I want to be stuck on a single tree and not, you got to be able to zoom out and just go, oh, that's what's happened. Oh, that's the, there's the large swath of color that I'm supposed to be looking for. Right? Instead of looking at individual stars, you want to draw that, draw the lines between them and find that constellation that you can't see unless it's pointed out to you. But once it's pointed out to you, you can't ignore it. Because all of these things are connected. So we're going to try to draw the connections here. So the last story that we covered from Steve Saylor is talking about how girls are unhappiest relative to boys in the most gender equal countries. So the more feminist your country is, the less happy your women are compared to the men. It would seem counterintuitive until you realize that just because something is called feminist doesn't mean it actually has the virtues of femininity in the forefront of its concerns. Just because they say that these are things for women doesn't mean it's actually good for women that these things are implemented or enacted. And so we see that actually the more feminist countries are, the more unhappy women are. And the more unhappy women are, the more support feminist groups get in an ironic feedback loop of misery that just gives them all the power they want in this Machiavellian problem reaction solution program that they run with continually and always seems to work because people don't wake up to or realize what's going on. Obviously, women are not the only ones affected by this, however. And this is a person on Twitter called Alexander at Date Psych. So this is a guy who does psychology in the realm of dating. He says, why are so many young men single? Are they excluded from a brutal mating market by society? Probably not. As he reveals here, 45% of men aged 18 to 25 have never approached a woman in person. Never approached a woman in person. They say a sizable minority of men are not approaching women at all. In the entire data set, 29% of men say they never approached a woman in person before. 27% said it had been more than 1 year. This was larger for men in the age 18 to 25 group. 45% had never approached a woman in person. This is, again, consistent with the hypothesis of a generational risk aversion trend in Zoomers. And that's an important part of this, risk aversion. And it's not exactly their fault? I think it's a little bit, there's some subtlety here, because you want to not be risk averse. You want to be able to take chances. And again, this goes to whether or not you have a support system around you, whether or not you have self-confidence to where you can get rejected and it's not life-destroying, where you can take a chance on something knowing full well that if you don't succeed in this chance, you still got your friends and your loved ones and the people behind you and your community. So like, why, you know, take the risk. Why not? Best case scenario, you get what you want. You get the date. You get the pretty girl. Worst case scenario, you're back to your happy, you know, functioning life. Now there's men that are so disconnected from everybody that it's just like they're already miserable. They're already lonely. And to add rejection on top of that, they just like can't even handle it. It's just it's the straw that breaks the camel's back. It's just another thing to pile on. They're already insurmountable misery, so they're not going to take the risk anyway, because like in that case it's almost reversed, where it's like, okay, best case scenario, you get a little bit of time with the girl. Worst case scenario, you're like utterly destroyed, to where like the best case scenario isn't even worth it because your life's already miserable and that's not even going to make it better. But the worst case scenario is you're already, you know, the pit of misery you're already in just gets deeper. So there's just no benefit to the attempt. So why should they? It's a calculation people are making in their heads, subconsciously or consciously. So they say 17% had not approached a woman in more than 1 year. Never in more than 1 year are discrete groups. This means about half of all single men in my data set are effectively not approaching women for dates in person. Obviously, consequence of technology as well. But technology is not where you find romantic partners for the most part, unless it's specifically designed for that, in which case it might be, you know, these results might be skewed, like a dating app, right, where the purpose is, but you don't find a real connection through that. And, you know, even just the transient way in which you make that connection sort of makes it more difficult from the outset. They say these men are significantly more risk adverse than those men who do approach women. This is actually a white pill. It isn't powerful forces of society at large that explain young male singledom. It's much more mundane. Young men are simply not trying. And this is where I mean the subtlety. Like, I kind of agree with this, but I also viscerally disagree with this.
Well, think about it. Like, you've got a young man, let's say early 20s, takes a woman out on a date, spends $80, right? Day three rolls around. He's like, What do we think? Like $250 in the hole if he averages something like that, to, you know, mid 200s, right? Taking her out, nice date. Mm-hmm. Date three gets to second base, right?
So what do you say? It's just not worth the investment.
Then realizes, hey, girl who I just got to second base with has OnlyFans account, and there are millions of dudes spending $20,
right,
to get to digital third base.
No, that's what I mean. It's like, he's like right and he's wrong, right? The correct part about this is that it is the fact that that young men are not trying, but the reason they're not trying is because of the large societal forces that are affecting their psychology and affecting the dating world and influencing not just young men to demoralize and humiliate them, but also young women to, you know, through the dating apps and stuff, where they have just like endless options of men that, and they can be super picky, and you know, that distorts their expectations of who they deserve, or not deserve, but who, you know, they're willing to go out with. So it's like, yes, it is. So it's weird. It's like you've got this societal impulse that is driving men to be single and to be cowardly and to be risk adverse, and to, you know, of course, the other part of this is like the Me Too movement and the fact that guys who go up and just say, hey, do you want to go? Hey, you're really good looking. Hey, you know, like sort of, you know, initiate the physical contact, just like, you know, hug a girl or something. And suddenly it's like, oh my God, I've been violated. And so like men aren't going to take that risk either. Okay. Best case scenario, I get a hug from a girl. Worst case scenario, I'm considered a rapist and that spreads on social media and I'm humiliated and ostracized for the rest of my life. Like, why would they make that decision? So it is about the societal impulse and the societal pressure that's being placed on everybody. And what this has to do, he actually calls it LOC, locus of control and dating difficulties. They say, he says that if you have internal locus of control, that is the degree with which you feel you have agency and control over your life, internal, if you internally manifest the path that your life takes, then you have high agency and high control. If you're an NPC, if you're an external locus of control, things just happen to you. You have low agency. You just respond to what other people do. And, you know, that really is the solution to this. The problem is caused by society, but the solution is caused by young men having the strength and having the confidence to just go up to women and just approach them and just give it a shot. And to have the confidence to know that, like, that woman rejects you. It's not like, oh, I'm so lame, I'm so ugly. It's like, that woman's missing out. I guess she's kind of dumb, bro, because you're awesome. And that's her fault for not seeing that. You move on to the next girl, and you'll find one eventually. So much of, like, the socialist idea, the ideological underpinnings of it, is, like, weakness and passivity and subtly indoctrinating you with the idea that you are just chaff in the wind. You're just blown about by these forces that are larger than you can control. Like, even in history, there's this argument between, like, the great man theory versus the trends and forces theory, where, you know, some people argue that it's just inevitable that certain things happen, that this, you know, with the mass movement of humanity, this is just going to occur, and there's going to be somebody that does this thing, and that person just fills the role. I in general, completely reject that concept. I think if you actually study history, it's obvious that individual choices that are made by individuals based on their own ideology, their own circumstance, their own temperament, that's what charts the course of the world. It's really kind of undeniable when you look at it. Look at Catherine de' Medici completely changing, like, everything about France because she probably, anyway, I don't want to go off on a big historical tangent, but the reality that can actually, like, give you superpowers in a lot of ways is realizing that you're in many ways in complete control of what happens to you and your response to it. And you really do dictate your own path through life, consciously or unconsciously. And when you are a passive recipient of action, that's a choice you're making, to be a passive recipient of action. You not making a choice is a choice you're making, in an ironic sort of way. And I'm not even, like, I'm not a super outgoing person in public, right? And in social, sort of, I'm not the type of person that just goes up and introduces myself to a random way, like, before I was married. That's just not something I did. All the girls I dated, we were, like, friends first, and then it evolved. But that's, you know, that's what's being robbed from people, right? These, like, this childhood, this innocence where you have time to figure things out, where there's not a lot of pressure, where you're just in person experimenting socially with, like, who you want to be and what you want to be like. But I was always in awe of the guys that could do that, because it's pretty amazing how effective just initiative is. I remember I was fixing sprinklers for a summer. I was, like, in my early 20s, and I worked with a guy named Michael that was, I think he was actually Israeli, but he looked Hispanic. He looked like a Mexican dude, like, long brown hair. Like, he was a handsome guy. He wasn't ugly or anything. But, like, we'd be eating lunch, like, taking a break. We're just, like, covered in mud, right? We've been literally digging ditches all day. It's, like, it was our job. And so we're just, like, covered in mud, like, sweaty as can be, just, like, looking disheveled. And this dude would just, he'd be like, oh, man, that hostess in the restaurant, it's really attractive. I'm going to go talk to her. You just get up, walk over. Hey, how's it going? I'm Michael. And I'd be like, hi, I'm Rebecca. Like, you know, it was amazing to see this work, because it was just nothing I would ever do, nothing I would ever attempt. But it's just like, you just have that confidence. You just put yourself out there. Even if it's uncomfortable, you just make yourself do it. I mean, it's amazing how effective acting is. Like, if you just act like you know what's going on, people assume you know what's going on. And then it turns out you're like, I kind of do know what's going on. I just have to pretend a little bit. So, like, And again, this isn't just about relationships. It's about anything. Nobody is going to recognize your genius and then come offer you a great job. You have to seize it. You have to go out and achieve what you want to achieve and do what you want to do. And this is why people like Andrew Tate are so attractive to young people who are completely missing out on this type of influence, which it's tricky because while Andrew Tate's right on a lot of that stuff, he's not setting himself up for happiness in the long term, and his style, his lifestyle is not actually healthy for most young men to try to approximate. The reality is you should really be thinking about like what you want in the future in terms of wife and children, and like you only have a certain amount of time to put all things in place to get to the point where you're in a stable relationship with someone you love that you want to have children with. Like that takes a long time. That takes a lot of work. You can't just like fool around for 2 decades and then at the end be like, yeah, now I want to settle down and find somebody. Like, you're just not setting yourself up for happiness. So, you know, this is not this like commodification of women that I support, but the idea of like, nobody's going to give you the job. Nobody's going to give you the thing that you want. You have to go out and get it, whether that's a relationship or a job or material goods or accomplishments. Nobody is going to give you the easy path. There is no easy path to that. The easy path is a trick. It's a lie. This is sort of the underlying philosophy behind socialism. It's just like, you just deserve it, so you should get it. And if it's not given to you, then you should complain until they give it to you. It's like, that's not actually the way the world works, and that's why everything's going off the rails right now. But so this guy who's talking about, the fact that young men are just massively lonely. Like, it really is a crisis at this point. And he's basically saying, like, it's because men, young men in particular, are not just doing the thing they need to do. It's not these big societal movements, which I've already explained. It is the societal movement. It's affecting the psychology and the reality that these young men face. So I'm empathetic for these young men, but he's right that the solution is just to go do the thing that you want to do. It's to go ask the girl out that you want to go out with. It's to overcome your own insecurities and the societally imposed insecurities, and just to have that confidence, even if you have to fake it at first. It'll come. It'll become real as you fake it almost. So somebody responds to him saying, what an empathetic response, lol. If true, why not help these guys? Because when women have a problem, it's the end of the world. Resources are marshaled. When men have a problem, it's buck up, buddy. Men are expendable. And I sort of get that response of being like, wow, so you're just telling men, like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, like you're suffering and miserable, but it's your own fault. Now he responds, Alexander, this guy responds to this saying, no one's going to coddle you in dating. Do you want somebody to hold your hand and talk and while you talk to women, external locus of control? Why doesn't someone help me? Go to a bar, dancing, hobby, talk to the cute girl in your class, but it's on you. So he's right in that. And the other thing is that, like, are the women helped by these programs? Are the women actually made happier when all of these resources are marshaled? Or, in fact, as we just saw, does that actually, in an inverse correlation, make women more miserable? Is it actually destroying women's happiness when they get the help that they want? So, like, this is helping men. This is how you help men. You tell them, buck up. You tell them, that's the way the world is. Sorry. You can try to ignore that and fail. Or you can accept that and strive, like, and succeed and thrive. That's really the point of this here. And they say men are afraid of losing their job, of being Me Too'd, of legal consequences, etc. Most men cited fear of rejection. This is risk aversion. You live in the same environment as everyone else. You're afraid to approach other men or not. So fear of rejection, according to these people, outweighs the fear of social consequences or legal consequences, although those are also present. And some guys just aren't attracted to anybody because they've been convinced a lot of times by the, like, this is the unhealthiness of the dichotomy of, like, men's whatever on social media. Where on one hand, it's like the Andrew Tate, like, just go out and be a player, be a hustler. It's just like most men are not wired that way and they shouldn't even really want to be. And then the flip side of that is you have, like, the incel, like, all women are trash, all modern women are sluts, and you have to avoid them, which is also entirely untrue and unfair to women of which there is a plethora of good women out there that are, you know, feeling just as rejected and lonely as men. It's up to you to go out and solve that problem together with each other. So it's a lack of healthy role models. It's a lack of a society that's built to be healthy. And it's a lack of support systems and, you know, self-confidence that young men have as they're constantly torn down on every pass and then told, like, if they speak out about it, that they're misogynist and shut up, you're not allowed to complain. So we'll get into how some of this just ideology, this feedback loop, this ever-churning cesspit of misery that is liberalism is affecting the world on a wider level in this second or this third hour of American Journal. We'll welcome Matt Baker in the next hour as well. We'll get to some very interesting economic and social goings-on. Before then, I do want to remind you to go to InfoWarsStore.com to support us. Again, it's if you want to support us, go to InfoWarsStore.com. If you just want a great supplement, if you just want to solve some of the persistent problems you have with your own health or your own ability, go to InfoWarsStore.com. Read the labels. Do your research into what these ingredients can do for you, and then buy the trifecta pack at 40% off.
To everybody out there, to all the people in all the countries, we love every single one of you. We love Venezuela. We love Mexico. We love Ukraine. We even love Russia. We love Africa. We love all of the beautiful people of all of the beautiful nations of the world. What is a nation? It is a country with people and culture and borders. That has nothing to do with what the United Nations wants to do. The United Nations is an international cartel that wants to create a one world government, not a bunch of individual nations. They don't want you to have your own language. They don't want you to have your own culture. They don't want you to have your own right to what goes inside your body. They want to take your children away and tell you that they can cut their penises off, pardon my French, because they say they know better than you. The United Nations is a fraud. They have no intentions of any one nation ever standing. They want to bring in a one world government in the biblical sense. They want to bring in a mark of the beast through a digital currency. So the digital currency will be tracked and traced. You will not spend anything, buy or sell on this planet unless these scumbags tell you it's okay. If they tell you you've spent too much carbon, then you won't be able to buy or sell. If you don't take a vaccine, you won't be able to buy or sell. We did not elect these people. We are Americans and we have our own rights. And you in Zambia, you have your own rights. And you in Africa have your own rights. And the Australian people have their own rights and their own cultures. But they do not want that. They want a one world government. That's what they want. That's all they want. They have a one world government treaty. They have a world pandemic treaty, which is going to supersede every single constitution on the planet next time in case there might be another pandemic, in case Fauci might be cooking up another one in the Wuhan lab. Remember, everyone said that that was a conspiracy theory? It turned out to be true, didn't it? What about the conspiracy theory that the vaccines weren't going to work? That turned out to be true too, didn't it, people? And what about the masks? We locked down for 2 years. Did that stop it? No, we're still here. What we need is our God-given immune system. We need the ability to have our own borders, our own cultures, our own languages, and not be ruled by an international banking cartel run by the United Nations, run by Klaus Schwab and his bastards like Yuval Noah Harari, who say free will is over on planet Earth, and they want to put a microchip in your head. It's not a conspiracy theory anymore now, people, is it? Are we just making this stuff up still? Are we just making up the fact that the vaccines don't work? Are we making up the fact that the borders are open? Are we making up the fact that they're going to force you to put whatever they want in your body? And who says it? The American government? The African government? No, it's the United Nations. Sorry for my French.
The United Nations.
Be a global citizen. In other words, be a citizen of nothing. Be a part of no national group. Be a completely bastardized, deracinated cog in a massive global machine. That's the message from the UN, countered powerfully by Matt Baker, who will be joining us in just a few minutes. Meantime, I remind you, we are fighting this globalist attack on two fronts. The first is the systemic corporate political front. We encourage taking over these organizations and forcing them to abandon the demands of the globalists. But the other side of this is the personal front. While you individually may not be able to make massive changes, together we can make these massive changes. And individually, you can, for yourself, help to defeat some of their programs on your own body or in your own mind. Go to InfoWarsStore.com to learn how to do this through sophisticated and powerful supplementation to undo some of the poisoning that we are continually confronted with through our food and water. InfoWarsStore.com. Thanks so much for being here with us. I hope you can support us by going to InfoWarsStore.com. After all, it's not just supporting us, it's supporting yourself as well. We have two more segments where we welcome Matt Baker. I'm wondering how much of this we can squeeze in here. But I want to start with this, because this is Time Magazine published yesterday. The conservative plan to build a parallel economy. And the real thing that comes across as you read this whole article is this leftist, liberal, kind of mainstream media tendency to report on the backlash from the conservatives without giving any credence to the reason why conservatives would want to lash back at the establishment, right? They talk about right-wingers wanting to not send their money to liberal groups as if this is some sort of attack on the liberal groups, as if the liberal groups didn't themselves decide to really viciously attack everybody who used to be their customers. It's just, it's like a weird mental illness, like narcissistic kind of impulse. Where like you attack people and when they go, well, all right, I'm not giving you my money anymore, you go, how dare you? How dare you not fund my attack against you? It's like, well, why would they? What are you talking about? You get this. You get what's going on. You're trying to destroy these people, and now you're trying to frame their resistance to destruction as some sort of offense against you. Nobody's falling for this. You get that, right? So they say, the controversy started, like so many things nowadays, with an internet rumor. Say, dear women, Tampax pays this man $10,000 to mock you, tweeted a right-wing influencer in April. Don't buy Tampax. The offense in question, transgender TikTok personality Dylan Mulvaney had posted a video with the company's tampons. Online conservatives, enraged by Tampax's history of trans-focused marketing, were soon excoriating the brand for entering an advertising partnership with Mulvaney. No such sponsorship existed. Mulvaney recorded the video on their own accord, his own accord. But the claim took off anyway, leading hard-right social media personalities to orchestrate a Tampax boycott. Isn't it funny they start with that example? Where, like, I'm not even sure what the legitimacy of that is. I mean, did Tampax disavow this? Are they not, you know, actively engaged in this type of marketing anyway? It's not like exactly out of the realm of possibility that this would happen, but they take the one example that they can find of a time when it wasn't exactly, like, the rumor wasn't exactly the truth. It's like, well, Tampax didn't actually pay them $10,000, so, you know, fact check false. Companies are not supported. And then you've got, like, the reality, which is every corporation just diving headlong into this leftist social programming. Where you've got, you know, the one that's been going around now because McDonald's in Japan has this really like cute little anime ad where it's just like a mom and dad, you know, feeding fries to their little daughter, and it's just like cute and happy. And then comparing that to the McDonald's ad in America where it's just like a fat man in makeup being like, Trent, stop killing us. Stop killing transgender people, you murderers. And it's like, ooh, okay. would love a burger right now, right? It's just like, what is this? So it's just like they take the one example where it's like, well, Dylan Mulvaney wasn't actually paid to support Tampax, but she was paid to support Bud Light. And every time I watch a movie on or watch a video on YouTube, I get, I mean, I'm sure people have seen this where it's like the Google Fiber ad where it's just like, I'm a transgender hypnotist and I want you to get Google Fiber. And it's just like, okay. All right, so you picked the one example where, like, this company wasn't actually getting a transgender person to support them, as if this somehow means that all of the other companies that are suicidally invested in this program don't exist. Like, okay, all right, that's fine. So they say something else happened. An anti-woke tampon brand that bills itself as the Girls Only Club emerged to provide the aggrieved with an alternative. Garnu has launched a year earlier, but with little traction. Now it capitalized on the controversy by using the right-wing media ecosystem to amplify its deliberately provocative slogan, only women can have periods. Oh, yeah. Deliberately provocative, this scientific fact. It's only deliberately provocative because you people are insane and reject reality outright. Sorry. The controversy brought a burst of social media attention, which in turn brought an offer from another nascent firm, Public Square, a Yelp-like directory of tens of thousands of conservative companies backed by Donald Trump Jr., the former president's son. First of its kind, Marketplace urged Garnu to join its platform. The company saw an immediate uptick in sales. According to Macy Maxson, Garnu's founder, a lot of people were searching for feminine products. It says it was validation in her eyes that right-of-center Americans were eager to rebel against the corporate wokeism with their wallets. We saw a very clear market. Garnu's story is part of a pattern, they say. After Bud Light released an actually sponsored ad with Mulvaney in June, prominent conservatives engineered a boycott in retaliation. Don't you love that? Wait, what was that? I missed that. The crew just brought something up. Okay, on Google, I guess if you search periods, can men have periods, says having a period is not a feminine thing. Plenty of men. Okay, yeah. That's deliberately provocative to me. Because it's a lie. Because it's a deliberate lie.
Gonna need to take a look at the source on that one. Yeah. Transhub.net.
Yeah. I suggest not looking for the source of that if you want your eyes to remain unbleached. But engineered a boycott in retaliation. Prominent conservatives engineered a boycott. Yeah, that didn't actually happen. There was no engineering of a boycott. It was that the vast majority of the consumers of Bud Light despised this ideology that they're pushing and chose to buy from another company. There is no engineering. See, this is the thing. Their boycotts are engineered. Their boycotts don't even involve customers, right? Their so-called boycotts are when the ADL goes to major companies and says, remove ads from this platform until they bend to our demands. That's not a boycott. It's like an advertiser boycott. No, that's an engineered extortion racket is what that is, when a bunch of Bud Light customers just decide to stop buying it with no organization, with no centralized planning committee, with no corporation or non-governmental organization like the ADL orchestrating it in the highest levels by, you know, co-opting their CEOs. That's an actual boycott. But see, they can't let that happen. They don't want to recognize or acknowledge this is just a natural backlash from the customers of these products. They have to frame it as if this was engineered by conservative activists, when the reality is just everybody hates this and stops buying your product. That's an actual boycott. But they want to, you know, disregard that. They want to throw shade at that. They want to pretend like you're somehow involved in some sort of devious plan. Which is just like, no, you just stop buying Bud Light and everybody supports it. So it's fine. Within 2 months, Bud Light was no longer the nation's most popular beer, according to Nielsen data analyzed by the consulting firm Bump Williams, with its sales dropping 24%. Target also saw a 4.5% drop in sales after conservatives revolted against the chain for displaying Pride merchandise in its stores. But the right hasn't only waged economic warfare in the form of boycotts. Again, they wage economic warfare. They take over these corporations and then use the corporations to force their ideology down our throat. When we reject it, we're blamed for waging economic warfare.
You bigoted, hateful consumer.
Transphobe, yeah. Oh, and by the way, Target just shut down 9 of its massive stores all across the United States, specifically in places where the Black Lives Matter program has defunded the police and led to massive increase in shoplifting and has bankrupted these stores. So is that economic warfare? Target's waged economic warfare on itself by giving tens of billions of dollars to the very organization that would lead to it closing dozens of its stores across the United States. That's economic warfare. This is what you're seeing here. This is economic warfare. A bunch of conservatives going, yeah, I'm not going to shop at the place that wants to sell tuck swimsuits to little boys. It's not economic warfare. That's survival instinct in action. That's a visceral rejection of the economic warfare you are waging. So again, they want to talk about your economic warfare against them, but they act like imposing their ideology through the corporations is not an act of aggression. Of course it is. They just don't like the backlash. This Times article, which really illustrates their fear of an effective counter movement. They always go out a little over their skis, right? They always sort of overextend the power that they do have, because they have unwieldy and oversized power in the corporate world. And they really feel like they're entitled to use that power to their own ends and have you just shut up and go along with it. They want to shove things down your throat that are completely contrary to your entire moral framework and religious beliefs, and they want you to comport yourself with it. They want you to submit to them forcibly altering the entire fabric of your society, and they're outraged when you merely complain about it or just choose to shop somewhere else. Again, they talk about the few percentage points that Target's profits went down because conservatives stopped going there when they realized that Target was advertising transgender paraphernalia to toddlers. They're outraged at that. Meanwhile, Target is shutting down 9 stores across the country as a direct consequence of the Black Lives Matter riots that they themselves funded and organized. And right now there's riots wrecking Philadelphia over some guy that got shot with a knife. Because it's not actually about injustice, it's about an excuse to get free crap. But they're very worried about that. They really are worried about the parallel economy. They do not want you to break out of their corporate system. They don't want you to realize the power that you have as a consumer. Collectively, we can bankrupt all these companies. They will all have to reform themselves if we stop buying their products. And it's not a big ask. It's not a major sacrifice you have to make to shop at one store rather than another, to drink one beer rather than the disgusting one. Like, it's very simple. So they really hate that. They really hate that there's a very simple, obvious solution to this, which is mass boycotts, mass buycotts, where you're shopping with people who agree with you ideologically and support you ideologically. Again, we were happy when capitalism was capitalism, when people in the corporations sold things to people that wanted it because that's what they wanted. Everything kind of works fine. When you have stakeholder capitalism come in, when you have these corporations giving themselves over completely to destructive and horrific social movements, that's when the problem comes in. They refuse to acknowledge any of that. They act like what these companies like Target and Bud Light are doing is just totally fine and normal and has always gone on. And it's the big bad Republican backlash that's really causing problems. Refusing to acknowledge what they did, but happy to report on the reaction to what they did as if it's a bad thing. And so they're very angry that there's all these corporations and just entire industries cropping up to serve the patriotic Americans who just want good products and don't want their money going towards abortion and transgenderism and racial division. They're very mad that you're finding a way around their inclusive system. The movement represents a change in recent American politics and consumer culture. Once corporations sought to avoid putting off potential customers by wading into politics. Think of the days when Michael Jordan refused to exert his influence in a racially charged Senate race in his home state of North Carolina, saying Republicans buy sneakers too. Today, many corporations lean on political ideology as calling cards, specifically targeting consumers based on their political tribe, whether it's Ben and Jerry's on the left or Hobby Lobby on the right. Don't you love that? Don't you love the way that they're just like, hey, it's both sides now? Really? I mean, even this comparison, right? It's like Ben and Jerry's, like, making political statements, using their social media to progress political movements, making ice cream flavors that are like Black Lives Matter nougat. Like, it's nougat is the ice cream N-word, actually. You've got these companies that are like suicidally, pathologically devoted to forcing this down your throat. And then you've got Hobby Lobby that's like, we're closed on Sunday, so you can go to church. And they're like, yeah, it's basically the same. It's basically the same. And on the left, they've got Ben and Jerry's, and on the right, they've got Hobby Lobby. When in reality, it's like on the left, they've got Target and Uber and the MLB and every major corporation in America and Amazon and Microsoft and Google and this and this and this and every major corporation you can name. And on the right, you have Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A. So, you know, it's basically it's like a total fair division, right? Come on, nobody's buying this, right? Nobody's thinking like, yeah, you know, some companies are left, some are right. It's like, okay, I guess, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you have, like, 10 years ago, Chick-fil-A, like, donated to a charity. Now they're in full support of Black Lives. So Chick-fil-A doesn't even count. I guess Hobby Lobby's the only one we have left. Hobby Lobby and the InfoWars store. Those are the corporations on the right. Totally absurd. For now, they say it's expanding in response to customer demand for conservative alternatives. In one sense, the parallel economy is just the latest iteration of right-wing attacks on woke corporate behavior. Yeah, we're attacking. Yeah, sure, why not? Yeah, we are. We are. We are attacking. We will destroy your corporate nonsense. We will destroy your woke syndicate. Yeah, it's an attack. It's an effective one. That's why you're writing this article. It's a terrifying one for you because we are attacking your attack. We are defending ourselves against your attack, and we will destroy your entire system because we actually have the buying power that you rely on, because your supporters are government dependents for the most part. So if you actually want the families and the prosperous individuals, you got to stop trying to shove transgenderism and whatever else down people's throat. Again, just the dishonesty that just pervades this entire story is just sickening, right? In another, it's a story of what's happening to America at large. As the country is becoming increasingly fragmented, now there are well-funded efforts to reshape the U.S. economy along those same ideological fissures. Do they mention the World Economic Forum? Do they mention stakeholder capitalism? Do they mention Salesforce, Mark Benioff, Klaus Schwab? Do they talk about these things? Of course not. Of course not. It's the right's fault for noticing and counteracting this. If they succeed, Americans' routine buying habits would no longer be a mere token of daily tedium, but an emblem of our national fracture. They're calling it the Patriot economy, which I love. Yeah, it's true. It's true. We are going to use our collective power politically, socially, financially to eviscerate your gay mafia. Sorry, that's going to happen. That is happening. And of course, hate to say it, but InfoWars has been talking about this for decades. And InfoWars Store is the best example of this. I mean, now this is a big talking point, the parallel economy. We are all completely in favor of it. Better late than never. But we've been on this since the beginning because InfoWars Store is where you can go to get incredible products and know that not only are you not supporting the transgender psychological operation going on, but you're actually supporting the primary opponent to the globalist scheme to take over corporations and bend them to the will of the globalist masters. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com. Support us in our free speech mission to assert and embody the First Amendment and oppose the tyrannical oppression that's taking root in this once free and last bastion of liberty country known as United States of America, Constitutional Republic. Go to InfoWarsStore.com to support the parallel economy, to do the thing that Time Magazine fears. Use your money to sway the world. InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we are live with Matt Baker. He's an activist and advocate for personal liberties. He's with us today to talk about his protest. He attended the UN building in San Diego. We played the video at the top of this hour. Incredibly powerful stuff. I'm just constantly in awe of Matt Baker's ability to just go on all fire on all cylinders off the cuff and like link together all these disparate ideas in the fight against globalism. You can follow Matt, of course, at Slave to Liberty. That's his band.video channel. His Instagram is MattBaker_unhinged. His Twitter is @slave_2_liberty. Matt Baker, Info Warrior extraordinaire, InfoWars Major General. Welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, Harrison, it's so good to be back with you after it's been a while now. It seems like almost like 6 months since I saw you last time.
Time flies. It hasn't been that. We were together in June. And then again for the American Liberty Awards. You're in a different dimension. That's why time's going faster for you. You're on the road to victory.
6 month dog whistle now, apparently.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I was just show earlier. I mean, these guys are getting out of control, aren't they?
Yeah. No, it takes paranoia to a whole nother level. But I'm so glad to have you on, because sort of the question that I've been wrestling with is, how do we evolve the info war? Because it seems like, and tell me if you agree with me, it seems like the period of revelation has concluded. It feels like everybody either get it or you don't now. Because they're open with their plan. So it's not that we have to unveil their secrets. Their secrets are out in the open now. So now we have to transfer, we have to evolve from revealing what they're doing to counteracting and preventing what they're doing. Do you think that we are beyond the mode of revelation, or do you think we still have some work to do in that regard?
Well, we're definitely making headway, that's for sure, because I posted that video and people are like, oh, there's not very many people there. But then, you know, now up to 500,000, it's probably going to head up to at least 1 million views by the time it's done. So regardless of how many people are actually there when you're doing a protest, it's like, it's really the video of the protest and putting it out on social media, which really, really gives it, you know, some of these things that Alex Stein goes to, it's like he'll be in a room and it's basically just the board and him. But yet these things go viral and it gets the word out there. See, but interestingly enough, I was surprised because there was actually no pushback at all. Normally, when we go to do these things, there'll be people like, shut up, loser, or whatever, Nazi. And like literally there were people stopping going, hey, what's going on here? And like you see people nodding. There's like that black gentleman up there with Austin Steinbart, actually from the Quantum Party. And he came by and he wanted to be a part of it. And there was this other Mexican dude that came up and we ended up with this giant hug at the end. And it was really cool. But I do think we still have a ways to go, because, I mean, until we completely and utterly dominate the narrative, I think that's when we really will be able to do the things we want to do, because it's still fighting an uphill battle. In these board of supervisors and stuff like that. So you can say, well, these guys are working for the UN and they can like literally have, you know, profiles on the UN and the World Economic Forum. And you can point it out to people and they still go, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. But right. These days are passing us by and people really are starting to understand what's going on. I mean, what they're doing with Lawfare, with Owen Schroyer, everybody, please defend Owen.com and also defend Alex.com. And they're coming up, like Trump's now frauding people over the price of Mar-a-Lago. I mean, they stop at nothing. These people are getting so disgusting with what they're doing, exposing themselves so badly. It really takes a very stupid person to not really start seeing what's going on here.
Right. And it takes a hateful, evil person to not agree with what you were saying in that very powerful speech. I mean, you are out there talking about how every nation has a right to be unmolested by these global corporate unelected organizations. Like, who's going to disagree with that? Who's going to disagree with their country having its own culture and its own independence and its own path through life? Like, this is just natural stuff. And correct me if I'm wrong, this wasn't like a planned protest either. The lack of crowd isn't because like you tried to hold a massive protest and nobody came. Am I wrong about that? You were just like doing sort of a march anyway and just happened upon the UN building. Tell us how this came about.
Well, actually, Audra Morgan, I did send another clip, but I know we're in a very short segment here. Audra Morgan, you've seen her. She's gotten beaten up down at the San Diego Council by the cops. I think you guys have had her on. She's actually been attacked by the cops twice. Audra Morgan is with the Storm. And she does these she's part of the Worldwide Freedom Rallies, right, that they do things in. So basically, because of the new COVID BS that's starting to kick in, we, all the people who used to march against the vaccine mandates back in the day when we used to get giant crowds, we basically got our core group together and just try to rally the troops to say, hey, look, we make sure everyone's still on the same page, make sure that everybody's still got their signs ready to go and their bullhorns and stuff like that. And so we kind of gathered in the park, more of almost like just like a meet and greet. And then we ended up doing like a small march. I mean, there's this area that where they have the different buildings. They have like a French building, this beautiful park, Balboa Park, absolutely gorgeous. If you're ever in San Diego, come by. They have like a French building, and they've got a Ukraine building where they're always protesting out there. And they have a German building and a Venezuela building. And it's like all in this courtyard. And
it's like an Embassy Row almost.
Yeah, but I never knew they actually had a UN building at the very center of it saying, become a global citizen. And so we were just like rolling by, and I saw, I was like, hello. I'm like, oh my God. You know, like let's post up here and make our scene here because, you know, and so it, all that stuff just came right off the top of my head. I mean, that's how deep in the thing we are. Like, I literally made no notes, no nothing on that. I wasn't even planning on protesting the UN. But that's what people have to realize, you know, like people that go out and will do a protest at a Target or will go out and protest at a Board of Supervisors, like get creative with it. Like if you see, you know, an international banking institution, or if you see a Google building, or if you see anything, post up, make a scene outside these different things, because each one of these things puts pressure on the bastards, as I call them, the powers that be, that are trying to run our life. And to get back to your point and my point about the United Nations, really, just to crystallize it, has no intention of uniting nations. What they want to do is they want to border of every nation and make it one giant blob. You know, in Ireland there used to be Irish people, and in like Scotland there was Scottish people, and you'd go to France and there'd be like guys running around with onions and bread on the back of their bicycles.
The beauty of true diversity.
Yeah, that's over. Now it's like, now you've got a freaking, you know, an African swap meet there, and there's like people having their warfare in the streets and stuff like that. It's like when you used to see all those flags, and like you see, it's a small world, you would see, look at this, Holland has their beautiful culture and France has their beautiful culture. And what they're doing is they're destroying all culture for this corporate takeover Borg overwrite, which is so grotesque and so disgusting. And basically its fuel is division and polarization. Mm-hmm. It makes it to where no one area of the planet can actually sit in comfort because we're constantly at odds with one another. And so they want to get rid of your religion. They want to get rid of your speech. They want to get rid of your money. They want to get rid of your privacy. They want to get rid of every single thing that makes you a nation. That's like saying the United People, but we would just want to hack everybody up and sew them together into a giant blob. It's like, that's not United People. That's the United Blob. And that's what they are. And they work with the world, you know, the World Health Organization and the whole pandemic treaty. That's all coming down from on high. You know, you've got them, and then it's the World Health Organization and the pandemic treaty, and then it goes over through Klaus Schwab and his cabinets that he's penetrating. Like, this Hydra is just taking over. We have to pull every single one. Anyone who starts spouting, like, sustainable goals or, you know, inclusivity, all of these people have to go. Like, they are canceled. They have to go.
And there's no reason why they should have their self-imposed rule over all of us. You're making such a good point. I look back, you know, what are the Olympics going to look like in the future, right? It used to be cool. You used to be able to see the German guys going against the guys from Ghana, like the World Cup. You know, it was cool seeing all these different cultures battle it out in sport in a fun way. Now it's just going to be like, okay, everybody running the race is Kenyan. They just are all wearing different flags on their uniform. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Matt Baker is my guest in this final segment of the American Journal for this Wednesday broadcast. His band.video channel is Slave2Liberty on Instagram. He can be followed at Matt_Baker_unhinged. His Twitter is Slave2Liberty. And I truly love Matt Baker. You really are like InfoWars manifest. And one of the reasons why I think what you do is so important is you are an activist, you are on the ground, you are dedicated to this in a way that is really astonishing and unparalleled by most people. And you do it in a positive way, because nothing about our message is at the heart of it negative. We have to go negative with some of these programs because they're so destructive, we have to attack them. But in reality, under our vision of the world, nobody has to suffer. Nobody has to be diminished for the sake of anybody else. It's about uplifting all of humanity together for everybody's sake. And you embody that and express that so well. And I wish more people were sort of on your level. And if we had 10,000 of you, we wouldn't even be in this situation. But I think people get this. People resonate with this, and I want to read a comment I got on Twitter just in the last segment. It's from a woman named Kat Miller, and she says this is what she sees as the theme of the second hour of American Journal. Really, it's the theme, I think, of everything InfoWars does. Kat Miller says there are two themes of today's show, buck up and carpe diem, right? Seize the day. She says buck up is for diffusing and releasing the feeling of being incapable, of overwhelming weakness and reeling against it. Buck up gives a second wind, helps one push beyond, rise to a challenge. Buck up gives fortitude and starts things moving. Carpe diem. Carpe diem is for diffusing and releasing grief, despair, and lackluster life experience. Carpe diem reminds us to live in the moment, that the past is gone, the future's yet to arrive. Carpe diem entices us to seize the day, the moment, and be in the now. And I would just love to get your response on this, because I think it corresponds to what you say. Buck up and carpe diem. These are two very good slogans for what we want for humanity, aren't they?
Yeah, slogans are very important. Axioms and mindset is huge. Just so people know, you know, because some people are like, oh, how would you do that? Or, you know, how do you do this? I mean, it's really quite simple. So Audra Morgan, who actually she has a radio show called The Storm, and she runs like a local group called The Storm, and she's gotten beaten up by these sheriffs and stuff down there speaking out. You know, for freedom. And so she called me a little while back ago, and she's like, oh, we're doing this. We're getting the march back together. We're doing this and that. And I was like, well, I'm going. And I committed to going. And that morning, it was a beautiful sunny day. And I woke up and I had the day off, and I was like, man, I don't want to go to this march. I don't want to do it. People just think I just wake up just running to marches. It's like, no. And I made a commitment to go to the march. And then when I went to the march, then I met all the people, and then we started talking, and then we started getting fired up. And it happens every time. You know, my girl, Cece, she was like, once you get there, you're going to be super excited and pumped. And she was right. So make a commitment to go to one of these protests, because they're going to be coming up again pretty soon. Seize the day. When you see that time, if someone says, hey, would you like to speak on the mic, or would you like to, you know, have the bullhorn? Grab it. You'd be surprised. Sometimes the Holy Spirit will move you, and you'll be able to speak and say things that you didn't think you were capable of. I mean, I'm not like speaking in tongues here, but it's crazy that some of this stuff just comes out of you. And especially if you've been feeling this oppression and you've been feeling all of these talking points for so long, when you finally let loose of that valve and let the water come gushing out of your mouth, it really is very cathartic. And it's amazing how many other people look around and go, oh my God, that's what I want to say. Mm. And it's something that will spread like wildfire, you know, like brush fires in the minds of men. And this buck up concept too, it's like, yeah, constantly everyone, even the most upbeat person, you know, will be like, ah, you know, what's the point? You know, it's very easy to look at the world that we're in and be like, oh my God, this is just insurmountable. There's no way out. You know, there's no point in going on. But then there's that inner voice within you.
Shoot, looks like we lost transmission there with Matt Baker. We'll get him back on. So I'm shoot, I was enjoying just sitting back and reveling in Matt Baker's wisdom, because he's exactly right. Matt, do we have you back now?
Yeah, I think so. Can you hear me? Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah, you were just saying, you know, in terms of buck up and a black pill, that people can get black pilled about what's going on and feel hopeless. So if you want to start there.
Yeah, it's like, it's very easy. I mean, look at the world that we're in, especially the people who are awake. I mean, the people who are sleepwalking, I mean, they're just like, I'm just going to Starbucks. I'm going to go to my game. What's the problem? It's us, the people who are trying to save everybody else. We're the ones who actually have to have the weight of all this pain of what looking at humanity's doing. There's Audra right there. And, you know, we have to power through that. We need to look into our soul. We need to pull the energy from our heart and through our mind and and push it out our mouth and get ourselves up off the couch and see the opportunities that are presented in front of us. Like, just so happens to be walking by the UN building and just so happened to have a small crowd of people to talk to. And it was cool because a lot of people came up afterwards and were like, yeah, you know, we believe what you're saying. And we actually got a few more people to our cause that are going to be coming to the future events. Speaking of which, November 18th, if you live in San Diego, we're going to be doing it again. We're going to go bigger this time, and we're going to march around the entire Balboa Park, which is a beautiful park. Beautiful, tremendous. One of these parks that was made for the World's Fair, actually, is one that didn't get torn down, and it's this beautiful older architecture with fountains and statues. It's just a great place to be.
In San Diego, right? You're in San Diego, California?
Absolutely, yeah. I would sell anybody to go there. A lot of people want to go to the beach, but this park is gorgeous. So we're going to go around by the fountains, by the statues, and we're going to stop and do different speakers, different events all there. And it will be Balboa Park, November 18th. Hit up me on Twitter or Audra Morgan at the Storm. I think if you just type her name in, you'll find her. So, yeah. Everyone's got to get involved, man. This fight is by no means over. You know, it's funny that the people in Hollywood all of a sudden are striking over their money, right? They're like, oh, we're striking now. They're like out in the streets. They're getting some pretty decent protests. But they hadn't have a word to say about the lockdowns or the vaccines being pushed into people's bodies or anything that was going on during COVID. And my theory is actually, and I called this out a few weeks ago, is that the strike would be over by October so that they could push the full-on COVID hysteria. Because right now we're all laughing like, it's not working. That's because they don't have their late-night patsies on air constantly pushing this fear. So this week they made a deal. The writers are back in the game, and the programming is going to start within a week. Okay, so watch your TV, and you're going to see these writers are now in line. And now that they've already been striking, they've all been off work for several months now. Now, when they tell them what to do, they're going to do what they say because they need that money. And so it's going to be crazy to see what happens with these late night talk shows and stuff now. I wouldn't be surprised. They're going to have to pull out all the stops. They're probably going to be like coughing up blood on air or something. I mean, they've got to do something to increase the fear because everyone's already seen all their tricks. And we know what they're up to. But I swear last night the writers came back online. I swear I started hearing the talking points already on my local station. I was like, oh, that's a writer right there. You can hear that's one of their big dogs putting out the fear talking points.
That's so funny. You know, I forgot that was you that called that out, because I remember seeing that tweet where you said, you know, by October, they'll be back because they need them to push the propaganda for the next COVID wave. I forgot that was you, but I saw that tweet. And then like a week later or so, they were saying, oh, actually, we're coming to an agreement. And I thought he nailed it. Whoever that was, he nailed it. I totally forgot that was you. You totally called that. That was prescient of you. Absolutely.
And in the meantime, now they're going to try and get Owen Troyer in jail during this point. So when the crescendo hits in late October, they're going to try to get Russell Brand off, just like they did the first time. They got Alex Jones off. They got all the people that they could pull out of the room, out of the conversation, and then they drop the BS in. I just got to say, to laugh at, did you see Strike Force 5? Have you seen that thing?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, my God. What a joke, man. I wish that thing went on forever. All those late night talk shows together couldn't get like 8,000 followers on Twitter.
It's such a good example of like, if these things aren't forced down your throat, nobody wants them. These people have no independent, authentic support for anything that they do. They're not funny. They're not charismatic. Nobody cares about them until they're forced down your throat in the form of like late night network productions. Matt Baker killing it as always. On band.video, Slave to Liberty, Matt Baker _unhinged. Follow and connect with him on Twitter at Slave_2_Liberty. The big march there in San Diego, Balboa Park, November 18th. Also, quickly, thank you so much for pointing out defendowen.com is where you can go to support Owen Troyer and his legal defense. Defendjones.com is the website for Alex's legal fund, not defendalex.com. It's defendjones.com is the correct one. And of course, you can get Matt Baker's incredible merch. Go to his Twitter and find all of his links. Thanks so much for being with us today, Matt.
Ben Howson is going to be soon. You better watch out.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. Stay tuned. Alex Jones in 90 seconds.